Hello and thank you for tuning in. We're excited to share a powerful and transformative message with you, brought to you by the Transformers Global Leadership Center. Our vision is focused on raising a new generation of Christian leaders who are called to bring about personal, national, and global transformation. Whether you're looking to deepen your faith, grow as a leader, or make an impact in your community, this message is designed to inspire and equip you to fulfill God's calling on your life. And here's the best part. You can download and listen to all our messages online. Simply visit www.transformersglobal.org and gain access to this life-changing content. You'll find practical insights and spiritual guidance that can help you step into your God-given purpose. Thank you for being part of this movement. Together, we can make a difference in the world. We look forward to walking this path with you.
Thank you very much, and good evening, everyone. Great evening. Great to have you here once again. I know we are starting a new series on becoming God's entrepreneur. It's something I am excited for and I've been looking forward to, and I'm sure that it's something that is going to be impactful to someone today. Okay. I find it very important that we discuss the issue of money, you know, because money is something that affects almost every area of our life. Everything we do in life revolves around money. It revolves around finances, and you discover that it goes a long way to determine whether people are happy, you know, whether people are enjoying their life the way it should. Okay. It's not something entirely bad to depend on what money can, you know, bring for us. Okay, because we need it for our own existence. What I'm hoping to do through this conversation is to demystify money, or what we call financial success, and to get us to a point where we can be able to, you know, see money differently and be able to understand how to make it work for us, how to make it, you know, to benefit us. Especially in Nigeria, there has been complaints about hardship. It's happening all over the world. Okay, there's inflation, there's continued suffering. Nigeria has never, for me, been better. Okay, I remember growing up buying a bread for 7 naira, 10 naira, from there 15 naira, 50 naira, 70 naira, 200 naira. And today you need more than 1,000 naira to buy a good bread. Okay, and things has always increased, things has always gotten worse, there has always been inflation, and things has always, you know, gone bad. Okay, the goal of this conversation is to help you to understand how to insulate yourself from economic crisis simply by changing your position. Okay, there will always be inflation, there is always going to be crisis, you know, in the marketplace. But there is a way that you can insulate yourself so you are not affected by your environment. You are not affected by your circumstances. You are always going to find yourself in a position where, irrespective of what is going on in the country where you live in, going on in your environment, you will discover that you are always finding yourself on the other side, doing better and doing greater. My goal is that you will also change your relationship with money, which is very important. Okay, where you find yourself at the top of the ladder and not at the bottom. Okay, and that starts with you changing your view of money. When we are starting, Mr. Francis mentioned the scripture. He says Deuteronomy 8:18. I want to read it for you again from NIV version. It says, "But remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you the ability to produce wealth, and so confirms the covenant which He swore to your ancestors as it is today." Okay, so produce wealth. One of my deep moments of crisis, one of the things I realized, you know, God speaking to me on in terms of taking care of my finances and taking care of some of the challenges I was facing, was that I hear the Holy Spirit was constantly speaking to me about producing wealth. He was talking to me about production, that my success is production. And I realized that it wasn't something He was speaking to only me. It was something that he was applying to every individual on earth. You must see it that wealth is produced from your inside. Wealth is a production. It is not something outside of you, but it's something that flows from inside of you. Okay? So when you put this scripture in the right context, one of the things you will realize is that when this conversation was coming to Moses from God, we don't really have the idea of money. There are form of trading then. It's called trade by barter. That means you have something of value, I have something of value, then we come to the marketplace and we make an exchange. Money was only introduced because we are trying to bring balance into the system. Okay, so you see someone who owns a land, but they are poor, they are not able to eat. So you find another person goes, takes that land and is providing them food, impoverishing them for the rest of their life, simply because there was no balanced medium of exchange. I once read in the history of Nigeria, in northern Nigeria specifically, where human beings are traded for, nine human beings are traded for one single horse. Imbalance in the system. They need the horse, but of course, the person who is going to make an exchange, what they are demanding is outrageous. Okay, so you see that imbalance of that system is what introduced the idea of money. So when you hear the Bible talking about your ability to produce wealth, it's not talking about you producing money. It couldn't have been to produce money. Okay, of course, in a society today, you can produce money. The government has the responsibility to do that. So it means that production is talking about something that is produced from within yourself, that serves humanity, something of value, that addresses human need, that you make an exchange for cash. Okay, so wealth here is not equal to money. Wealth here is equal to value. So when the Bible is talking about God giving us the ability to produce wealth, he's simply talking about us having the ability to produce something of value. So if I'm going to say it in another way, wealth is simply having something people want. More wealth is having something a lot of people want. Okay, so the difference between two individuals, two communities, two countries, is the fact that the other is able to produce more value than the other one. So let me redefine poverty for you, okay? A poor person is not someone who lacks cash. A poor person, I need you to take note of this. A poor person is not someone who lacks cash. A poor person is someone who lacks value. Because what you bring in the marketplace to exchange for cash is value. So if you are not a person of value, you will lack cash. If you are not a person who is producing wealth, producing value, you will lack cash because you will have nothing to exchange with in the marketplace. So each time you find yourself depressed, each time you find yourself unhappy, each time you find yourself discouraged because you don't have money, I need you to understand that what makes you poor is not because of the absence of cash. What makes you poor is the fact that you are unable to produce value that you can make in exchange with cash. Let me read another scripture to you, which I feel is very important to this conversation. And it is Proverbs 22:29. It says, do you see any truly competent worker? They will serve kings rather than working for ordinary people. Another translation said, he said, do you see a man who is skillful? So when you see skillful, when you see competence, it is only addressing a person's ability to produce value. Your inability to produce value is what makes you incompetent. It's what makes you unskillful. But your ability to produce value is what makes you skillful, what makes you competent. So work is a means of creating value. Competent work is quality value. So it means that work is given for you to create value. So the higher your value, the higher the demand. And then the higher the demand, the higher the pay. So that is why you understand, even in countries where there are inflation, of course it's happening everywhere, some countries have more inflation more than others. But what you understand is that inflation never affects people who have value. Inflation always affects people who lack value. Okay? And the reason for that is that people who have value are the ones controlling the commodity. So in the time of inflation, one of the things we notice is that there is an increase in price. So if there is an increase in price, a poor person, which is a person who doesn't have value, loses money. So if you have 50,000 naira, 2 years, 3 years from now, what 50,000 naira could have bought for you, because of the increase of the price of commodity in the marketplace, you will no longer be able to afford those things. Okay? But the person who is selling a bag of rice, there is an inflation. The bag of rice that was sold for 50,000 naira, the price increases to 100,000 naira. What happens is that in as much as there is an inflation, it only increases the value of the commodity. So inflation does not destroy the value of commodity. It increases the value. Therefore, any man that controls the commodity will constantly increase in value. So inflation only increases the amount of money that enters in the hand of a person with value. That is the only thing inflation does. So the more there is inflation, the more they have increase. So the more there is an inflation, a poor person who is a person without value is going to lose more money until they become poor, because they don't have any form of value sustaining the replenishment or that money coming back to them as an exchange of value. So that is where the challenge is. And you see, the Bible talks about the path of the just shining brighter and brighter. It means that your success, your wealth, your increase is not dependent on the circumstance, countries, anywhere you find yourself, is dependent on your ability to create value. I remember when I came to the UK with my wife, my kids, we are not here then. You know, we're even considering doing a lot of jobs or having two jobs and things like that. And one day, the Holy Spirit spoke, you know, to my heart. And then we had to do personal retreats. Okay. And one of the things God was drawing my, this is one thing I find very powerful about our relationship with God, because it needs to be able to guide you. It needs to be able to give you insight. It needs to be able to help you, you know, to navigate these issues and things about life and become a person of value. And one of the scriptures the Holy Spirit we used in that personal retreat, I and my wife, was Matthew 6:33, where it says, "Seek first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added unto you." In other words, God was drawing my attention to be a person of value. Okay? And what happens is that by living a value-based life, you are intentionally increasing your worth and don't necessarily have to, you know, find yourself in multiple jobs or in multiple stresses in order to make a living. No. So the goal, in other words, is not to seek a means to earn money. Sometimes you might find yourself where you are experiencing hardship, things are difficult, you don't have money, you know, to be able to get the things you want in life. It is normal, it's natural, it happens to everybody. But you must remember that the goal is not to seek for a means to earn money. That shouldn't be something that you occupy your mind with. What you should occupy your mind with, rather, is to seek opportunity to increase value. Value always attracts money. Always. So don't seek for means to earn money. Seek for means to increase value. You will always exchange value with cash. Okay? So I want to speak to you about two kinds of workers. There are two kinds of workers I want to talk to you about. You know, the first kind of worker, of course, there is more. Okay, we have evil workers, but anybody based on, because of the title of this conversation, anybody that came into this meeting, I'm sure came in to understand what we are discussing, falls into these two categories. Okay, and the first category of the two kinds of workers I want to share is first, survivor workers. Okay, what is unique about this kind of individuals is that they see work as a means to earn money. They depend heavily on pay. So their mindset is about transaction. Okay. How much am I going to be paid? How much am I going to earn? It's all about money. Here's nothing about improvement. They are constantly driven by the survivor mindset of how much can I earn? How much can I own? Okay. But the second kind of worker, which I want you to be, of course, is a creative worker. What is different between a creative worker and a survival worker? A creative worker sees work as a means of creating value. Okay, they depend heavily on value. They depend heavily on improvement. They depend heavily on value creation. Let me point out that the goal of entrepreneurship is not to create money, but to create value. So when you become God entrepreneur, your primary goal, what God is looking at, what God is seeking, is how does a person utilize the skills, the intellect, the knowledge, whatever God has given them, to produce value for the greater society, for the greater good of man. So you are not just becoming an entrepreneur because you are looking for an additional source of income. Sometimes you hear people tell you, you know, to have multiple streams of income, to have additional source of income. The motivation, the goal, is not because I want to have money. The goal is that I can create value. But see what? Value always returns cash to you because people want to make an exchange. So if you look at nations, for instance, you see what is happening in China, you see what is happening in Nigeria. What can you compare differently with those two nations is the fact that one is a producer, the other is a consumer. And it's a mindset. It's a mindset. By the time that you are going to school, you know, you already trained. You know, they will tell you go to school so that you can graduate and get a job, so that you can earn, so that you can get a source of living, a means of livelihood. That is the conversation. And what happens is that it begins to drive us. You might say, okay, if China is producing, they want to make money. Yes, but you remember, I said you need to change where you stand. Your standpoint needs to be different. The position has to be different. Your relationship with money has to change. And it has to be about your ability to create value, not because you are looking for cash. So, in terms of survival, your dependency is on earning. But in terms of being a creative worker, the goal of your heart is how do I create value? So God is not looking for people who want to make money, but people who want to create value. You know, the one thing that is very good about Solomon's prayer is that when God came to Solomon, he asked him, what can I do for you? Solomon would have asked for money, would have asked for long life, he would have asked for health, he would have asked for any kind of thing. But he asked, I want to be a great leader. I want to serve the people. I want to be able to help Israel to prosper. So what happened was that his consciousness, his concern is not to earn for himself. The goal was to create value that serves the interests of others. Those are the two positions. And when we started, I said that what continuously that we, you know, insulate you from economic crisis is that you must move your mind from just being someone who is looking at what will benefit me to how do I create other value that will serve others. Okay, so I want to quickly show you how to create value. Because of time, you know, we are trying everything possible to keep this meeting within an hour, and I wouldn't want to overshoot that. So because of time, I want to, you know, speak to you on how to create value. And on talking about how to create value, I want to, you know, deal with a misconception. Okay, misconception in the sense that I'm going to present value, you know, creation, you know, in terms of innovation, but I don't want you to see innovation as creating something new, okay? I don't want you to often think of as innovation as, okay, I want to bring out something new. I want you to see innovation as your ability to replace a process or inventing something about a process, okay? Creating value is not necessarily about inventing something new. Okay, I'm trying to find a way to frame it so that it's not necessarily, you know, people will say think outside the box. I'm not trying to push you to a point where you are trying to say, okay, what is it that people will need tomorrow? Or what is it that I need to create in terms of value? No, it's to look at processes that are already existing and then you replace it. Value is not about taking people outside of what they know. It's about improving what they already know. Okay, so let me share an example which I found as very interesting. I mean, when I read it, I was reading some things about the Age of Enlightenment, the Industrial Age, and all that. And I saw a story where they wrote that we used to have human alarm clocks or human alarm system. Okay, so how human alarm system works is that there are individuals that are paid money. And what they do is that because of the industrial age, a lot of industries are coming on. People go to factories to work early in the morning, so they need to wake up early. So what they do is that there's no alarm. So if you sleep, you might just wake up and discover, oh, I'm late to work. So what happens is that there are people that are paid who move in the communities, and they knock and they make noise and do things to wake you up so that you don't miss your schedule. So what happened is that over time, that alarm system, that human alarm system, is what became an alarm clock. So the person who was creating an alarm clock was not creating an alarm clock just to have something that will ring and wake people up. No, he was creating it because he's seeing it as a way to replace that human system that goes to knock on door, which is now becoming obsolete and redundant, and it's not effective. So imagine if 50 people want to wake up in the street. How do you move around to wake them up? By the time you are done waking maybe the last person up, probably you're already 30 minutes late to work. So he did that something that could work, something that would be of value. And then they produce the first alarm clock. And by the time they produce the first alarm clock, they go to market. You don't need to tell anybody to buy. You don't need to spend so much money in marketing. Some of the things that we do in terms of marketing and trying to convince people about something might take you back to ask yourself, does people really need what I want or what I'm producing? This value I'm creating, is it really meeting any need? So by the time alarm clock hit the system, now today people have, you know, set alarm with their phones, with their watches, and a lot of things. And the truth is that innovation over time happened because people were trying to replace processes. Okay, so I needed to travel. I have to walk with leg. And then from there, what happens is that somebody learns how to train horses, and we started using horses as a means of movement. So from there, you have carts drawing horses. So somebody started creating carts. So instead of carrying one person, it could carry four people. Okay. So somebody thought of a bicycle. Somebody thought about a car. Somebody thought about ships. Then we thought, okay, traveling with ships takes months. And then the next thing is that we are now thinking of aeroplanes. So what happens is that you are trying to improve the way humans are creating experiences, their productivity, you know, or simply to make life safer and easier. So you are not necessarily creating something new or trying to take people out of the process. Innovation is people are still within their process. They are doing what they want to do, but you are creating a value that either improves, replaces, or makes better whatever process people find themselves in. Okay, so that is why, you know, there are people whose job is to sit down, to look at life, to study life, to study human existence. Okay, so creating value is not necessarily inventing something new, in quotes. Okay, it's new, but I want you to think in terms of a process. It's new, but you are trying to enhance people's productivity, people's experience, you know, simply trying to make life better or easier or cheaper. Okay, so successful ideas, you now discover, are ideas that are built to introduce something new to enhance human experience. Whatever that experience is for you, they are constantly thinking, how do I enhance it? And how do I find something I can enhance that a lot of people need? Then a value is born. So the second thing I want to mention to you in creating a value is the world changes based on human needs. Every change you see in life today is based on human needs. Okay? So you have to, even if you want to create a business or you want to create a product or service, you have to be able to find out how to convince people or how to show them that they need this. I don't know how many of you have gone to market and you saw something. You say, oh, wow, this thing is existing. Oh, I need it. Okay, especially women, you know, they just go to market. Sometimes you see them, maybe they want to cut okra or they want something they need easy in the kitchen. And they just come and they just see something and they say, ah, people are thinking, you know, somebody has created this. Who is the person that created that? That person is observing human needs. They are observing human movements. They are observing human processes. They wake up, they go to work, they come back, they rest, they need to eat healthy, they need to exercise. I saw somebody recently who has a dance class. What happens in the dance class is teaching people how to dance with their dog. It might not sound like value to you, but when you live in an environment where people spend time with dogs more than actual humans, you will know that maybe they might be thinking of what to do with their dog. Well, you can teach your dog how to dance, and both of you can dance. And then people are paying for the class, and the person is making money from it. It might sound absurd to you, but what I'm trying to say is that somebody saw it as a need by observing people, by observing a lot of people who own dogs. And he was able to design a value that those customers receive and appreciate, and then they make exchange with it. And as long as there are human beings who are buying dogs, who live with dogs, who live, sometimes the only thing in their house is them and their pets, there will always be value creation. So what am I saying in essence? Take time and study life. This is not something that is, you know, very natural to us as Africans. You know, we want to react more to life than sit down, think, and then respond. So take time to study people. Look at data. Try to find insights. Look at what people are addicted to. Look at what people are thinking. Look at human behavior. Look at human desires. Look at passion. Whatever it is, you have to be able to sit down to study yourself, study others, study your environment, and then you begin to make some things to click together. No matter how long it takes you, you have to be able to find it. Okay, I was reading one book, and this guy went around, I might remember it before I'm done talking about it. He went around America interviewing different CEOs, okay? And what he was trying to find out from the CEOs is to know their plans, to know their strategies, to know what they want to do, okay? And then you will go to a lot of Fortune 500 companies, asking them questions, trying to find out what they are doing, how they are doing it, this and that. And then eventually he came to Steve Jobs. So when he came to Steve Jobs, Steve Jobs told the guy that, what he just did now was to cut down, that there are a lot of things Apple is doing that they are not supposed to do. That's after they reinstated him to Apple. Initially they removed him and they brought him back. So when he came back, you know, it was now, you know, restructuring it, a lot of things Apple was doing, he was cutting it down. And the man was not asking him, so now that you are doing all those things, so what next? He said he hasn't found out what next. So that what he wants to see now is to sit down and see the next wave. And then when he sees the next wave, he will build on it. And then make plans on it. So he's not just trying to make plans for making plans' sake. He's sitting down to look at the next wave, and then he will now build on it. So what Steve Jobs was looking for is not to just take over of Apple computers and then start selling computers. No, he's sitting down to identify what aspect of human need can Apple be able to press into and break into the next level of innovation in the marketplace. And that was when he started thinking. They were innovating. They were looking at human design, looking at what people are doing, looking at the way you use your CD Walkman. And then they started thinking of, okay. So what if we have something like an iPod, you know, instead of using your Walkman, the CD spoils. And then from there, we have a music bank where people can synchronize. And then from there, if you produce a music, you no longer need to, you know, go and produce CDs. All you need to do is to bring it in our market bank. Then people sync it to their phones and listen to it or to their device. Before it became phone, it was a device. And then when they sync it to their device, what happens is that you don't need to waste so much money in terms of producing CDs. We do away with that, okay? You bring it here. As they sync, you make money. And the people who are listening pay us to be there. And that is from there they created iPod, from there they created iMusic, and it became a major $1 billion industry all over the world. Yes, Apple was innovative, but what did they do? They simply replaced the process, made it easier for you, enhanced that value, renovated it, or whatever you will call it, repackaged it back to you, and you looked at it and said, oh, nice, this is much better. And then you are exchanging money for it. I work as a digital analyst, and I can tell you that it is incredible. It is incredible. So when you hear people tell you the wealth that is in data, okay, most of us in Africa do not value it because we are not taught data. There is nothing data-driven decision about us in Africa. Our communities are not driven by data. Government decision is not driven by data. Nothing is done in our schools is driven by data. There is absolutely anything that gives us insights that you need to study. Even the projects you do in school, nobody cares anything about it. You just do that, you waste your time, you throw it away, and it ends there. So you grow up in a system where you don't understand that science, the idea of study, the idea of knowledge, the idea of understanding how things work is actually what keeps you ahead of life, both as an individual and as a state. When it comes to a nation, you have to think ahead. When I look at budgets, I look at state budgets in Nigeria, I look at what countries in Africa is doing. Sometimes I just sit and I ask myself, don't they see where the world is going to? Don't they see what is happening around us? And then you live in a community where people celebrate leaders because they built roads or that they are building a hotel. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, don't they see? Are they not thinking that governments are shifting? Strategies are shifting? Value innovation is shifting? Nobody is thinking about how to even reinvent the model of how we run the states, the model, how we run different things. Everybody's just queued on the line. Nobody is simply paying attention to data. Let me give you an instance. When I was in Nigeria, I did a work with Oxford Policy Management. The work was a research work that was sponsored by Facebook, okay, for West Africa. The contractor for that job was Gamos. Okay, so Facebook contracted Gamos, and then Gamos, of course, contracted Oxford Policy Managers, and that's where we came in. So what was it? You are trying to collect data of internet usage, of life, of your environment, and then this data is collected in different locations, cities, villages, everywhere. It was when I was shocked. I went to somewhere in Ibueze. Sorry for some of you who are not, from eastern part of Nigeria. It's a very remote village. In fact, when we drove in and came there, we discovered that we're asking people, so do you guys access internet? Say, yes. Yeah. So usually when you access internet, what do you do? Facebook. Okay, so but you struggle with network. How do you do it? They took us to a mountain where you see a lot of young people. They sit down. So once they climb that hilly area, they get network. So they come there in the afternoons and the evening just to browse and be online. And when they are done, they come down. When it's getting late, they come down and go home. And I also saw another invention I never knew that existed. So in that village, there's no network. So what they do is that they bring this bamboo tree, they tie it to form like a long pole, put an antenna, with a wire. Yeah. So what they do is that once they put that wire on their charging port, network comes on their phone. This is what people are doing to have access, not just to be able to make calls, but to have access to internet. Now, but they will ask how many people are in the family, how many people are going to school, what kind of toilets do you use, what kind of sicknesses or health challenges do you experience, all kinds of data are being collected far from Silicon Valley. But people who live in that environment, even the local chiefs, have no idea of the information about their society. Whoever controls that information, and I want you to understand how it works, whoever controls that information is able to innovate human needs. So that is why you sit down at your home, something they will just manufacture it. You look at it, you just like it. Somebody have studied you. Somebody have tried to understand how your environment works, how all these things make sense. So that by the time the product comes to the market, you know, part of the things we study is usability. Okay? So the door on your knobs, your mouse, all these things, the way it is, they are trying to understand how do you think, how do you process, and how do we package something that it appeals to you. So it means that increasing your value, you have to change your position. Move yourself from a consumer to a producer. Move yourself to somebody who is studying life, who is trying to understand the environment, understanding human needs, and being able to design solutions that will package that human need. In summary, identify problems, identify needs that people, you know, are constantly facing. Conduct research. You know, part of what we do in digital analytics is to look at, there's something we call customer pain points. So you have journeys. So each time somebody comes on a website, we are monitoring their journey. We are monitoring what is going on. Why is it happening? Why are they doing that? Why do they visit a particular point? What are they looking for there? So we have all kinds of things that is studying human interaction online. And what happens is that at the end of the day, we create a product. And what is shocking is that most times when we are creating that product, we can almost quantify how much it's worth in the market. I've sat down in an organization and there was a data analysis that said that if this company implements this change, they are going to make extra $5 million by implementing this change based on the study. And then we went ahead to implement the change. That money was surpassed. Study. It's not that they went somewhere and then they did deja vu. No, study. Everything about you is under study. Everything. So when you live in a society that does not value that, that is only reactive to their environment, there won't be much people who are making impact when it comes to finances. Then gather feedback and insights. Then you refine your approach. You constantly improve and you are constantly studying your environment. The next thing I want to tell you is learn how things work. Learn how things work. Learn how life works. Don't be consumed by your inability to meet your daily bread. No. Think ahead. Ask yourself questions. Be innovative in terms of studying life, looking at processes. Next week, I'm going to show you there's something I developed years ago I call the business value process. I'm going to show you that slide, you know, to help you because of time. I wanted to do it today, but time will not permit me to do that. But from next week, I'm going to show you the business value process. Then I will move on into other topics. And part of what I'm going to do with the business value process is just like a chart to show you human movement, human process. So basically, once there is a need, the question is that who is meeting that need? Okay, so where are they getting the raw material to meet that need? Who is processing that raw material? Who is marketing that raw material? Who is servicing that marketed raw material? Recycling that raw material? And who is at the end point trying to innovate and bring out something new from that raw material? So there is a value chain, a business value chain process that when you look at it, you can find out a missing link and say, okay, nothing has actually happened here. Nobody has done something about it. Okay, so how many people are experiencing this problem? 5 people. Okay, let me check again. Let me look at sampling. Okay, is it only in my state? Are there people having this problem all across Nigeria? Okay, yes. So it means that if I can find a solution to this problem and fix this problem, I've created a value to so amount of people. Yes, you now go involve, get yourself involved, and then begin to look at how to service that value. Okay, so provide solutions, not just product and service. People buy solutions, not products. People buy solutions, not services. Okay? So the last thing I want to say is leverage your unique strengths. When creating value, leverage your unique strengths. And when I mean your unique strengths, align yourself with value, with purpose, sorry. You know, we are big on having conversations on value. That's where everything that we are starting. So when trying to be innovative, find out your line of purpose. And then as you apply yourself in your line of purpose, you also find people in that line who are not maybe where they are supposed to be or doing things that they are supposed to do. And then as you begin to create and innovate solutions in that area, value is created. Okay? So align with your purpose. Ensure your work aligns with the bigger vision and mission. Okay? Remember, you are creating impact beyond financial gain. Okay? So the idea is social good. The idea is sustainability. The idea is empowerment. You are not just there because you want to make financial gain. You are there to bring about improvement. Make value creation a core part of your purpose and leadership. Nations are driven by purpose and leadership, not financial gain. If you look at Africa and look at China, the only difference is that you have a continent that is motivated by financial gain, and then you have a continent that is motivated by value. It is not the same. You might say, okay, but China is creating products so that they can make more money. But you see, what is driving them is not more money. What is driving them is dominance through value creation. Every nation is trying to be recognized as the ones producing the solution that the world needs. That is first of all the goal. That is why I said your relationship with money has to change. You have to move that relationship away from looking at money as paper to looking at money as value. Look at wealth as value and not just paper. So that survivor mindset makes you look for paper. But a creative worker is looking for value. And like I said, you are not poor because you lack money. You are poor because you lack value. Value is something you bring to the marketplace and you make an exchange with cash. And irrespective of inflation, irrespective of anything going on in your environment, a person who has value will always float. The person who has value will always come up on the other side higher. Like the Bible said, the path of the just shineth brighter and brighter unto a perfect day. Okay? And thank you so much. I hope you guys took something out of this.
Thank you for listening. Please do follow us on our social media handles on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok at Transformers Global LC, on Twitter X at TGlobalLC.